It's the Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, my name's Jerry. I'm FRO anywhere on the internet. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm Scott, also known as Doc Scooter in Neverwinter, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, I'm SS White, a.k.a. Zerling Cold in Neverwinter. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, this is Ben, a.k.a. DM Silver Adept of Neverwinter Nights Realms of Trinity and the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Hey, this is Brian, a.k.a. Sir Brian of the Realms of Trinity and Neverwinter Nights podcast. And you're listening to the 189th episode of the Neverwinter Nights podcast, a podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games and now the released MMO from Cryptic, Neverwinter. Well, it's been a while, Ben, since we've had a podcast. It's the whole Christmas season kind of doused our scheduling plans.
Yeah, a little bit fa-la-la-la-la in the way.
Yeah. And so, finally back. It's been a month. I hope you didn't miss us too much. And you know, we got a great episode tonight. We have several guests that came on, and you know, I want to have them introduce themselves. And before you do, though, I just want to thank all of you for coming on and being part of this inaugural roundtable.
Glad to be here.
It's awesome. So getting started, in the same order we did the introductions, if you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to start working in Neverwinter, playing Neverwinter.
Well, thanks a lot, guys, for having me. This is the second time, so thank you very much for that. It's been, God, probably 6 months now since I've started playing. I've got 8 quests, 8 foundries. In 3 different campaigns, 1 single. For the most part, they're all pretty much the same as when we talked before, just added more titles to them, got things cleaned up a little bit. One of my short stories is getting ready to be reprinted probably this month, within the next few weeks or so, and working on my new book, just work, work, work. It's all coming along pretty good.
My introduction into Neverwinter is really through Champions Online. I was a freelance designer and illustrator for Hero Games at the time that Cryptic Studios bought the intellectual property. So some of the material that I did for the tabletop game appeared in Champs Online. And so when Neverwinter got released, because of my connection to Champs, I had access to Neverwinter and jumped into the testing of that. Never really thought I'd do anything in the Foundry. The Foundry was kind of a... I stumbled into it when I was tired of grinding up a character, and I thought I wanted to try a different side of the game.
Yeah.
And what started out as just an experiment to kill some time and have fun turned into my first adventure, and it led to a whole series, the Dangers of Doomdalot series. I've had a really great time with it. I've been surprised at how much fun the Foundry's been along the way, and it's been fun getting to know other Foundry authors along the way, too.
Very cool.
I found Neverwinter Online. I've been looking for an MMO that correlated with R.A. Salvatore's works for years, ever since I first discovered MMOs, and a friend mentioned it to me, and I found it. I didn't start on the Foundry until after open beta. However, I've been a writer pretty much my whole life, and I hadn't written anything for a while, so when I found the Foundry, I was finally able to start writing again. That's why I enjoy it so much.
Very cool. So have you had any, like, did you worked any electronic games before that, like module development or, you know, custom content?
No. The Neverwinter Foundry is my first experience with that.
I know that the Neverwinter dev team, I mean, that was one of their big things when they were developing the Foundry and the content was to have content authors such as yourself that you don't have a necessary background in that, you know, to actually be able to get in there and actually just get in and do the development, which is great. So, you know, getting started on our actual discussion, you know, I know that you've all been around the Foundry a good bit and the game's been out for a while now, but is there any thoughts that any of you have how Neverwinter is doing after 6 months of being live? Like, what's your general thoughts being in the thick of it day to day?
Well, it's going pretty good, I think. It has its ups and downs. I'm sure you're aware of some of the issues with the big patches, but they get them straightened out pretty quick and everything. And overall, the game is improving. A lot of changes here recently with the enchantments and everything, but it's nothing to get used to. And seems to be a lot of people on it. A lot of people came back to check it out that had been gone for a while, so it looks good.
Yeah, I've been really impressed by how much content they've continued to release in just the short time the game's been out. Both modules have come with a lot of extra gameplay, and it was kind of forced by stretching it out through the dailies and such. But it provided a whole lot more to the game. It shows promise that they're still investing. It's not just out there and then abandoned to be a profit generator. They're continuing to build the game and the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think that has a lot to do with, you know, how the product has evolved. I mean, ever since it was announced and the ideas of how everything was going to go, I think it was a big difference between the previous instances of Neverwinter Nights versus this, is where, you know, it's actually a change in corporate mentality. Instead of just like one and done, you know, let's develop something, dump it, make the money and move on. It's develop it and let's let the world evolve and continue to actually support it, not just to make some money off of. I mean, I think that there's a lot more that went into Neverwinter than the previous, you know, games.
And there's a sense that the designers are having fun with it, too, that it's not become just a chore for them. They're actually got ideas they want to bring into a reality. I think the fact that they're having fun makes the game still fun and fresh.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's a big part of any development, really. If you hate what you're doing, you know, it's probably not going to go too good, you know. The kobolds will be running around with 600,000 hit points and 100 AB.
Well, you can even see that in the foundries. You can tell when a foundry author is really enjoying the creative process and has an idea that they love and care about. And then those who kind of are just sort of throwing it away or get weary after a while.
Yeah, that's the thing that, you know, you do see. I mean, I know that, you know, and I have to, I go back to what I know the best, because I, you know, I haven't been in the foundry as much as I'd like to, or Neverwinter for that much. And, you know, the one thing that I know from our experiences is that, you know, the Obsidian devs, they were getting plastered. If you looked at the social BioWare forums and the Obsidian forums, they were getting obliterated by players because of all the bugs and stuff. It got to the point where, you know, they were kind of crippled because it was just like they didn't really want to work on it anymore, you know, any patches or anything. So, I mean, there's a big difference between that and I think the constructive nature of the feedback that you see on the Neverwinter forums.
Yeah, I still think they need to explore incentives for the Foundry for the average player beyond just a 15-minute daily and, you know, run an hour with the Foundries as quick and fast as you can for a reward. Right now, the storytelling of the Foundry sort of becomes its own reward. And when they can integrate some kind of an incentive into the game that's more meaningful, I think even the Foundry will take on more depth, and there'll be more authors attracted to it, and people will be kind of pushed to be more creative.
Yeah, definitely. What do you have any ideas on, like, what kind of incentives that you would like to see? Or,
well, the 15-minute, you know, do four of them for Astral Diamonds is all right. It becomes a discouragement for those who want to create longer storylines, unless they can break them up into short pieces. There's no profession tasks available, that sort of thing. There's got to be some kind of a coin reward or some kind of a monetary system that the more foundries you play, the more tokens of some sort you get that can be turned in for meaningful in-game rewards, sort of like the PvP system does. The problem is because it's player-generated, it opens himself up to abuse. So I understand their struggle, but I think that's a problem they still need to solve.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a different model than, you know, I'd say it's been done hardly ever. Man, I know some of their other products that they've dealt with stuff like that, but, you know, this is kind of a new thing because of how much popularity it has and how much capability it has.
Well, and it's so accessible, too. That surprised me when I first jumped into the Foundry. There's a little learning curve when you first start, but pretty quickly you get the hang of it and you realize there's a lot of power available to the average player to create content for this game.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Big difference. Big difference from what, you know, we still use and what other people have used in the past. I mean, you had to be pretty much a professional developer to use some of the tools that games came with or, you know, were developed for specific engines. Talking about that, what are your thoughts on the Foundry, I mean, itself? I mean, is there features that, what do you all feel like the features that could be a big help to the community, being that you're regularly developing?
One of the things that keeps coming up is a timer. There really needs to be a proper timer. The workarounds just simply don't work. Once there's patches that change things, people have to go in and fix everything. And there really needs to be a proper timer.
I'd love to see kind of logic paths that give you an either-or approach to Foundry development, too. Right now, you have to grab the player by the nose and kind of drag him through a single storyline. And the choices he make are really illusions because you've got to get him from point A to B, and there's only one path. And you can do side quests, you can do things like that, but ultimately the tasks that have to be accomplished are all scripted. And it'd be nice to see where a player could make honest choices that would affect the ending of the adventure.
Yeah, we get that a lot, too. I mean, I think that, you know, from a programming standpoint, whenever you try to put a lot of that type of content and mechanisms in, we're like, okay, if you do A, you know, B can happen or C could happen, or, you know, you could change what your choices are and have different outcomes. You know, it's one of those types of things. If you take the time and be able to, if you have the mechanism to do it, first of all, it's probably a great idea to see if you can work some of it in, you know, because otherwise, you're right. I mean, you sit there and you're like, okay, well, if I do this, this is always going to happen this way. You know, there's no real, it's just like you're more or less reading the book directly. Yeah, so it's not so much that you're interacting like a classic RPG or something.
And it makes it difficult to create replay value for the foundries too. I know the last one that I did, I created three different paths through the adventure so that hopefully a player could come back and go through the same adventure. The beginning and the end are the same, but there's three different ways to get from point A to point B. But boy, that's really hard. It stretches the resources. You've got to shove all those different paths on the same map. It works, but it's just not the same as letting a player have real choice.
Anything else you could think of? No. Anything else you can think of for feature-wise that, you know, that you've been working on stuff and you're like, hey, you know, man, I wish this worked this way or that way? Or
well, I brought up friendly encounters on the forum not too long ago because right now there's not really anything, not very many choices for friendly encounters. There's nothing to represent a thief. There's no dual weapons. There's no two-weapon or two-handed weapon fighters to represent the great weapon fighter. Most of the friendlies work decent, but there could really be a lot more friendlies or a few more for storytelling purposes. Just a few singles would help a lot.
We're always looking for more resources to play with. Clothing is one that I never thought that I'd care a lot about, but I run into issues of creating NPCs, and the moment you decide to change the default appearance of a character, and you start changing the slots of what items they're wearing, you're now drawing basically from armor sets of different character classes or some odds and ends from monsters, but not a whole lot of variety in noble, more expensive garments or more unusual kinds of things. You basically are covering characters with armor, which doesn't really work if they're all the NPCs in a town or a city.
Okay, so they don't have like a base armor appearance, you know, on the model itself. You actually have to equip something on it and then make changes to that or equip different items themselves.
Yeah, there's some peasant clothing out there, but it's all variations of the same thing. Like, there's sort of one peasant shirt. You can wear peasant pants that are patched or not patched, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But there's not a lot of variety. And the moment you say, I want to put him in, say, a robe, it gives you a list of different levels of wizard's robe, from kind of the newbie basic armor to the really fancy high-end armor. But he's looking like a player's equipped character rather than an NPC at that point.
Yep, I get you now.
Yeah, yeah, that's where changing the color comes in. Like, I do almost all my stuff is custom, and I try to get rid of all that default color, and that really changes things up. But that is an issue.
And it's little things, like you can't change facial hair on male characters. Or, you know, if you grab a male NPC encounter that's got a white beard, well, that's it. You can change his hair color, but you can't change his beard color. So it sort of limits what you're capable of doing. And having created all adventures that are full of townspeople, that diversity, every single character that I've created is customed, but I'm running into it all the time of wanting to be more creative, and there just aren't a lot of options.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, especially if you're really trying to do something detailed, and, you know, you're running past all these NPCs, and they all look, you know, I mean, I know they don't look all the same, but, you know, they have these limitations to how diverse you can actually make them.
When I find myself jealous in Protector's Enclave every time I see an NPC with a piece of clothing that's not available to us in the Foundry, I think, oh, see, now you've already got the art. Just give it to us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah. I think, I mean, I actually, you know, I'm actually surprised that it's not available, because I would think that they would use all the same resources that the game uses. You know, as you add stuff to the game, it would be available pretty much automatically with that. You know, I didn't realize that they were separate.
Yeah, it seems to be a separate database. There's some items that don't.
Okay, I got you now.
Okay, I'd like to say that, first of all, I still love Neverwinter, so in my opinion, it's still doing great after 6 months. As for the Foundry, I feel like it could use a little more love sometimes. There are things that, like everything these guys have mentioned, that people have been asking for a long time, over and over again. And sometimes it feels like we're kind of put on the back burner. But even so, I think the better authors, the more dedicated authors are still there, using the new features and coping with the changes that we have. One of the main things that I would like to see is more animals, because I like to use a lot of animals, and we don't have very many as far as being able to have wildlife in the background and that sort of thing. And also have a better way to use animals as friendly encounters without them having human-like lights and certain effects coming off of them.
Or voices. You have a bear that starts talking and saying how glad he's to be at your side, and he's talking to you.
For the Nashers.
Yeah. Or animals that you can change the size or color of. Or right now, if it's a pig, it's a pig. That's it. That's what it's going to look like. You cannot make a giant pig yet.
We're going full Disney on this, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I swear I want a giant chicken boss.
And chickens!
Yes, that's the reason why we never moved to Neverwinter, because there wasn't a big chicken. We can't make the bull turkin. So one of our maniacal mascots that we've built for the server. But yeah, that's funny though. Yeah, I can see that. I can see how that could be definitely how that could be limiting, because after making thousands and thousands, you know, NPC blueprints over the last 6 years that are for us, I can only imagine. You know, we have that capability, and I can only imagine if I couldn't actually set the scale of a creature, it'd be challenging. I got to hand it to all you to be able to come up with, you know, unique content and, you know, with your creative style and everything, trying to go through and have those limitations. That's definitely would stifle me.
Well, sometimes it's the limitations that make you come up with something different though. Because you got to work around something. You got to come up with something. So you start thinking about it, and that's when you come up with things.
Yep, that's true too. I think, wasn't you told me about the drawbridge thing or something about the water under you, like the going underneath like the tile set or something? You actually had like an underwater thing going on?
Not me. Somebody else. I'm not talking about it. Somebody does.
Yeah.
I played that one actually. There might be more than one, I don't know, but I played one like that that was pretty crazy. I don't know how it was done, really.
It was a mistake, actually. don't quote me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty darn sure that it was a mistake and that it actually ended up being something, a trick that he ended up using to develop content. So right there, perfect example of what you just said. Coming outside the box. And I think, Ben, you called it a happy accident, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. So I mean, yeah, there's definitely stuff that you could stumble on whenever you're challenged to come up with something different.
We could go on and list, you know, lots and lots of things that we'd love to see. Dragons would be nice in a game that's based on Dungeons and Dragons, for instance. But let's hear it for the 3D editor that changed the whole development process. It shows that they really are still throwing us really important tools. I remember trying to build the first one that I did without that 3D editor, and now it's a completely different experience being able to fly the camera about and place objects while in the game. It's great.
Oh, yeah. That's got it. I know whenever I read that they were releasing that, you know, because that was one of the things, because I did the beta stuff too, you know, doing evaluations of the Foundry and just providing feedback and stuff to Andy Velasquez. And you know, the thing of the matter was, is like, that was like the first thing that I thought of, like, it's because doing Neverwinter Nights too, we have a 3D editor like that, you know. It's like, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I put this placeable down here and I gotta run the module, see where it is, what it looks like and stuff. And I was like, this would take forever to get something exactly the way you want it. And when they said they were adding it, I was like, holy smokes, that's going to be huge.
That, and they just added 5 more Foundry slots too, so that's pretty.
You mean slots for your quests and stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It was only 10. They've gone up to 15 now.
Nice.
So that's a nice increase.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because that's the other thing. I know I don't know if, Ben, was that the last episode we were talking about that, where, you know, the person we had on, they actually ran out of slots?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, one of them things, it's like, you talk about stifling development. You know, if you can't actually develop anymore,
Well, it's funny, they added the extra 5 slots right after me and a bunch of other people were talking about not having any more slots or only having, like, 1 or 2 left on the forums. And there were a lot of people talking about that, and that they ended up adding them the next patch after that. So it was sort of cool how that sort of timed.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, they have more over in Star Trek and such, right?
I believe so, yeah.
See, I've never checked out that game, but I've thought about it just because it has a foundry.
Yeah, I think it does, but, you know, I think it comes down to the maturity of the product. I mean, that Star Trek Online's been out definitely longer than the foundry, the Neverwinter has, so...
Yeah,
I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, scaling up, you know, because I know it, talking to, because I interviewed Jack Emmert and when we were out at Gen Con, me and Ben did, and I know one of the things he had told me that it was kind of funny, but it's really cool at the same time, is the fact that, you know, how fast they had to build this game, and the fact that they really kind of developed it like a small time operation, like starting from the ground up, and the way they did it was, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why it's taken a little longer to me to get the extra slot space and whatever else, because it went to like a global operation like overnight practically. So, I mean, there's a lot that went into this game, but it really did start at the ground, like grassroots, you know.
Something else that I would like to see, and it's been discussed on the forums, is a way for those authors whose quests are chosen to be featured to still be able to edit their quests if they need to. That's something that keeps some authors from even submitting to be featured, because if a patch breaks your quest, you can't go in and fix it.
Well, I found, even with the quest that I had most recently featured, it was a shorter one. It actually timed out at about 16 minutes average, which they don't do a lot of featured quests for short ones like that. But with the last patch, everybody kind of geared up a little bit and started blowing through all those foundries, and I'm noticing all the average play times are going down. So the featured foundry just today dropped to 14 minutes, which knocked it out of a daily. And there's no way to go back in and tweak that out to make it still qualify it at a little bit longer runtime now. And there's nothing worse than playing a featured foundry and realizing you left a typo in that you never caught, and it's now there forever.
Exactly. That's why I'm considering submitting my second one, Cold Acres Grandmother. But I tie my quests together using a history book. I don't have them in an actual campaign. So when I add quests to my quest line later, I would have to go back and edit my history book. And not saying that my quest would get picked, but about that I wouldn't be able to go back and add what I wanted to.
Right.
Or if we get new features, if they give us deer or other animals, I can't go back and put them on my homestead.
Yeah, I could see that being a definite limitation there. I mean, you definitely want to be able to, you know, refactor your content or add to it. We still do stuff after developed in five, 6 years ago. We still add or refactor, change things over, you know, after a while. I mean, it's to not be able to do that, it's definitely a limitation. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I still go back to published foundries that have, you know, been played for several months, and I'll throw in a counter here or change up something or twist the map a little bit just so it's more interesting for someone who comes back through at another time. And once it's featured, that's gone.
Overall, I know we've been covering for some of the options you guys would like to see, some of the pain points, some of the good points. Is there something that you guys say hands down makes this system more, I don't want to say beneficial, but something that you guys think, wow, I'm glad I can do things because this allows me to tell my story in a certain way, or this allows me to sort of go forward with things in a way that, even if it's not perfect, it's still something I can create for the players? Is there any one thing that you feel sort of makes life interesting for both you as a creator and for the players when they go through it?
Well, if you're talking about that one feature that makes me want to come back and keep designing, this is going to sound really stupid, I think, but I actually like that I can light my environments creatively. I really enjoy creating the environment. I like being able to set an atmosphere and using special effects that are creative and visually interesting, so that, you know, I can throw multicolored dynamic lights and cast shadows off cave walls, and I find myself almost painting with the visuals of the foundry, and I kind of get lost in the whole environment development stuff, and that makes me want to come back and try new things and try new effects and create new environments.
Yeah, there's not really any single thing that draws me to it. It's just the whole thing. They keep adding to it, so it just keeps more getting more interesting as a whole.
I'd have to agree with Doc Scooter that being able to create the world for the players to interact in is what I enjoy most about it. As a writer, when I write, all I have is words, and the player or the reader has to use their imagination and just picture everything in their mind as they read my words. But with the foundry, I can build my world, I can build my characters, I can set an atmosphere to create a certain emotion or feeling, even the sounds, being able to have a girl crying in the background or something that really, really completely sets the whole atmosphere, the whole thing, instead of just words to read.
Yeah, definitely environmental sounds and effects like that definitely help the immersion factor. There's no question about that. You know, being able to drop stuff like that in is huge to do stuff. I mean, that you environmental effects, lightning, whatever, you know, all kind of stuff. You can go through the gambit how much that really can doctor up an area. You know, or you actually set the theme or mood of your, you know, what you're working on. You know, it's something that just come to my mind now after talking about this stuff. Like, what about music selection? How's that like in the foundry? Like for ambient back, you know, just the standard music for the area, or, you know, whatnot.
Well, the ambient music, well, not really music, but the sounds, the ambient sounds are pretty lacking. There could be a lot more ambient sounds. The music, though, there's a pretty good selection of music.
How often is that updated? Like, as far as the musical scores and things like that, do they add that regularly, or is that something that's kind of whenever it gets gotten to?
We've seen more sound effects and such added progressively, but not a whole lot more music selections, unless it was related to... I'm trying to think if there was any new music that came out related to the modules, but I can't even think of anything right now.
There hasn't been a lot of music. Like you said, there's been sound effects, but the music, there's not much calm, soothing, peaceful music. There's like one track, and I'm getting sick of listening to my own quests because I have to use the same track over and over. I was hoping for more. The one actually in the Winter Festival is pretty nice. Be nice to have that if anybody's listening.
Hey, I'll take all the resources from the Winter Festival, thank you.
True.
Those are
I got
great.
A sled. It'd be nice to have the sled, too. I don't know what I would do with it, but I just want one.
I'll take snowy roofs and all that winter effect stuff. We've got a lot of snow, but it's limited to just a couple of maps as basics. If you tried to take a random exterior map and make it snowy that didn't start as a prefab, it's going to suck out all your resources before you get very far, and it just looks like you're walking around on big balls of cotton because it's not well designed. So more snow effect is great.
Definitely. Well, I think that, too. I think it comes down to as far as the placeables, too, like the buildings and, you know, all the other stuff that you can place. If they don't have a snowy effect on them, you know, that really adds a lot, too.
When you asked about things that have us coming back, another one that came to mind for me, besides just designing environments, I've managed to get my whole family to play Neverwinter. And as an author, I've had a real kick of watching, like, one of my kids sit down and play through a foundry quest that I designed, and just watching over their shoulders as they're sort of reading it and discovering it for the first time, watching them laugh at the jokes or catch my typos or rate the fights and that sort of thing. It's been a relational process here.
It's great. Yeah, having like a generational type of thing like that with your whole family, I think that's awesome.
Definitely.
Well, and my kids like saying their dad designs computer games, so that helps. You know, you have to.
Yeah, I bet. that's something that, you know, you didn't hear too much of back maybe 10, 15 years ago. You know, people being able to say that, because you really do. You are designing the computer games.
Right.
And it's just the way it is. And I think the tools have just gotten so good and so accessible that, you know, you have the capability doing that if you haven't had the training on, you know, using heavier duty stuff. You know, I definitely think that all the power that you have, as easy as it is to get to, not that there isn't a learning curve, like you said, you know, it definitely still is, but much better than what you've had to deal with in the past.
So since we've sort of covered our planned topics, have a fun one. If you could have one sort of gag item, you know, something you could kick in, the, you know, be it something people would find interesting, something people would get a chuckle out of, or that would be a neat little non sequitur you could put somewhere, what would it be?
Wow.
I know, I asked the fun ones.
That is a good one.
Wow, that's a toughie.
Yeah.
So the giant chicken doesn't count?
That would be definitely.
Well, counting. I was going to say, I figure that one Brian's got dibs on.
Yeah. Yeah, Obsidian actually adopted our bull turkey into the core game. actually, after we rolled it out. Yeah. I kind of got dibs on that one, but. Yeah. But great minds think alike, though.
I'm thinking I've added a lot of humor to each of my my adventures. But I think what's made them funny is that it's a kind of a twisting or distorting of the darker themes that come standard in the game. And if you added comical themes, I'm not sure that they would come across as funny. You know, it's like the first time you see someone riding by in one of those winter sleds with the little fawn hopping after them right now. That's hilarious. But when you see 10 of them, it stops being funny. So if you put it in as an asset to the foundry, I don't know if it would stay funny for very long.
Yeah, I can see that being the case in that particular circumstance, yeah.
Right, yeah, but I'm just thinking, like, I know for me personally, if I could throw anything in there, it'd be a TARDIS.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Brian's laughing because if he didn't see that one coming, I'd get to point and laugh at him at this point.
Hey, but you know what's funny, though? In our last episode, we had an update from the Amethyst Dragon. He's a Neverwinter Nights 1 producer, and, you know, he he actually is doing TARDISes. Well, actually, his group is doing it. It actually did a whole Doctor Who theme. I know it's a digression from our topic, but it's funny that you say that, but they actually are doing that, so that's kind of funny.
Well, then for clothing assets, I want all the tabards from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yes.
Yeah, and the rabbit. I want the
rabbit.
Yeah,
the rabbit.
There we go. I'm just picturing that goes in there, and some poor player enters a cave, and there's thousands of them.
That's good. I mean, there's definitely limitations as far as giving players the capacity to have stuff like that, but I mean, I could see there being some interesting things that you could probably come up with. You know, with what's available, I guess. I mean, but I think it would really depend on how much more tailoring you can do to existing, you know, resources.
For just whimsy and such, it'd be fun to get costume pieces like a pointed witch's hat or fairy wings or, you know, some of the more fairy tale kinds of things. We still don't have unicorns available to us in the foundry, and some of those kinds of assets are in game. It'd be nice to see them available to us, and you could create more of a whimsical environment.
Yeah, definitely. And you don't see too much of that. I mean, at least what I've seen in the past. I don't know about the Foundry so much, but I know that, you know, previous user-defined modules and things like that where people make content, you don't really get that feel very often. And I think it probably is because there's not enough resources to really bring it home, you know?
Sometimes we have the resources available, we just don't have enough budget to be able to. And sometimes it's that certain assets use up more of the budget. For example, the trees. Some of the trees use up 3 or 5 budget slots, so you have to watch for that. So it's hard to use a lot of trees or a lot of flowers or a lot of effects or a lot of anything because you start losing your budget.
Yeah, cave pieces have that same problem. If you're doing something in a cave, you've got to watch your resources pretty quick.
Now, when you say budget, you're talking about how many placeables you could put down and different things like that, like the trees.
Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
It's sharp how fast that goes.
Yeah, we have 1,500 slots, but when you start trying to build a forest, you know, you lose that 1,500 slots pretty fast. And especially when, if you don't look closely when you go to drop a tree, because this is exactly what happened to me, I didn't realize that some of my trees were worth 3 or 5 spaces instead of just one. I had to go back and change a lot of them.
Now, does the counter actually change as you're putting them in?
On the 2D editor, yes. On the 3D, no. That's one of the things I've asked for, since it's so easy now to add details from the 3D editor, we need a counter there so we can see where we're at.
Yeah, that would make definitely make a big difference, especially if you're being limited on how much you can place. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that'd be interesting. You have to kind of, when you have free reign, you still have to self-limit. You know, because you could kill a person's video card pretty quick if you don't. But we've put together some crazy stuff that's, you know, definitely I can see why that there is a resource limit. but yeah, I mean, if something really isn't taking up a lot of resource, but it was tagged to take up a lot of resources, that'd be like one of those types of things that, you know, as long as it was done very carefully as placeables were being added, it'd probably be okay. But for trees and stuff like that to take that much resource up, that's a lot. Out of curiosity, how much do you have per area? Is it like fixed for the size of the area, or is it something that it's dynamic depending on the size of the area?
It's fixed per map. So you have 1,500 resources per map. What is it? So many, 50 encounters, I think, and I forget how many NPCs and so many sounds and so many place markers, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's 50 NPCs too.
Nice 20 sounds.
Yeah, and I do find that the more resources I use, the slower the map loads, so I understand the limitation, but we're constantly watching that budget. I think that's why a lot of Foundry authors are using pre-made maps, because there's a lot of things already built in, if they don't mind someone else's creativity for whatever part of the story they're telling, they get more resources to play with. But if you start with a blank slate, like you said, to build a forest or whatever, it's a real challenge.
Yeah, my first quest, I used a pre-made map, and I still used up the entire 1,500 details. That quest was corrupted with the first module, and I had to rebuild. So for me, I prefer to start with a blank map. And also, part of the problem I had with the pre-made map was I wanted to place, say, a barn. I couldn't use the inside of it because there were bushes there. You can't do anything about those. So I see how it can come in handy for a lot of people, and it was a very, very nice, very lovely map. I got a lot of compliments on it that were undeserved because I didn't build that map myself. But it's still, sometimes in certain cases, it's still better, I think, to start with a blank map.
Basically, one of the things we always like to do is we sort of ask people, do you have any final thoughts or overall messages that you think everybody would want to hear, or final thoughts to share with everybody? So we'll throw that out. In if you have something that, you know, you want to throw out there, or ideas, jokes, saying hi to mom, whatever works.
I stay everybody that listens to the podcast, and I hope everybody keeps coming, checking out the Foundry, and keeps new content coming out. And like to see some people from the persistent world maybe making some stuff. We'll see how it goes.
We'll get there, don't worry. We'll get there.
Yeah, I guess I just want to encourage folks who might be listening, if you enjoy the Foundry at all, by all means, dive in and create stuff and add to that content pool. I know that it's intimidating the first time you open up that Foundry editor and all those tabs and very little instruction. But give it an hour or two, and you'll find it to be a real blast. It's a whole different side of the game. And I think the Foundry community, those who are writing and those who really are enjoying them, kind of become a whole new aspect of playing with people that you enjoy.
I'd like to say hello to everyone listening from Scribes Enclave. And I think that part of the reason why some of us are still here after the problems that we faced, the limitations, the frustrations, is because we have our group of people. And so we never have to face those alone. Like when my quest was corrupted, I didn't have to face that alone. I had people pushing me, telling me I could do it, that I could rebuild. So I really appreciate all of the members of Scribes Enclave. They're a circle of friends as much as a support system. And you know, we're still welcoming new members anytime.
And we'll be posting that information on our show notes as well. We've we've been posting about the Scribes Enclave, but we'll definitely repost that with this episode as well. So if you want to join in, we'll have links there and everything, all the details on that too. Well, you know, I want to thank for everybody for coming on the show on this show today, because this is a really good conversation piece. You know, we've been wanting to do a roundtable for some time. I know I told Ephra all that when we interviewed you and the other guys. We're going to have another one. We're going to put a thing out again. So if any, you're all welcome to come back, and we'll put it out within probably about a month. We'll probably do another one, because we're going to get a couple non-roundtable shows in the next couple weeks. So keep an eye out for that. I'll be posting that on the Neverwinter forums as well and our Facebook page. And, you know, if anybody has any updates on products, if you have anything that you're going to be featuring, you know, or anything you're rolling out or anything like that, please let us know. You know, we'd be happy to be able to get stuff out there for you and talk about it. It's the more we talk about the stuff, the better it gets. So
thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Oh, it's been a blast. You know, and for all you listening, you know, stay tuned. We have a lot of episodes coming, and hope you have all great New Year, and we'll see you next time. So until next time, get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of the Realms of Trinity, who are solely responsible for its contents.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine. We'll be right back.